Letter Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelzang. As part of our Smithsonian Associates Partnership Program, our guest today, Deborah Riley, is head of production design on the phenomenal HBO show Game of Thrones. No doubt you've seen that flashy opening sequence of Game of Thrones season after season, and we all know that theme music here, generously supplied by musicians The Chapel Hill Duo.
I've enjoyed a lovely run on Game of Thrones, and the things that I've learned, the sets that we've established, the worlds that we've created, all that sort of thing is the kind of stuff that I'll be talking about when I'm at the Smithsonian.
That, of course, is our guest today, Deborah Riley. Personally, I love George R.R. Martin's books, the Fire and Ice series, and the HBO program, too. For those devoted followers of HBO's Game of Thrones, the Seven Kingdoms of Westeros is a land we know intimately. Its castle halls, towering battlements, starkly beautiful landscapes, and torchlit chambers are places that root the epic narrative in a highly detailed world that bridges the real and the imagined. Deborah Riley is responsible for creating that visual environment against which the saga of power, family, revenge, and romance plays out. Join me in welcoming today to the Not Old Better Show Smithsonian Associates Art of Living series, Deborah Riley. Deborah Riley, it is a pleasure to talk to you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a real pleasure from this end as well.
Well, and we're talking to you in Australia, so it is doubly a pleasure. We appreciate your time. You're going to be at the Smithsonian Associates Program on, it's coming up, it's going to be June 13th, 2017, and going to be a lot of fans, I know, really eager to see and hear from you, but maybe you can start by telling us just a little bit about yourself and a little bit about the program that you're going to be a part of there at Smithsonian Associates.
So I joined Game of Thrones as the production designer in season four, and I've now completed the last four seasons with the show, so the one that's about to air season seven. I'm just about to start work on season eight, which will be the final season of the show. So I've enjoyed a lovely run on Game of Thrones, and the things that I've learned, the sets that we've established, the worlds that we've created, all that sort of thing is the kind of stuff that I'll be talking about when I'm at the Smithsonian. Game of Thrones is one of those very rare pieces that you work on, you know, if you're lucky once in your career. It's like lightning in a bottle. And it's just sort of reached some sort of point in pop culture where even if people don't watch the show, they're very aware of it. And it's reached a sort of saturation point where there is an enormous awareness of it in the public. So, I'll share a few of the, you know, a few of the experiences that I've had working on the show. And, for those fans who enjoy the whole production value of the show, not only the fantastic writing and the characters, but also the settings and, you know, what we build and the locations that we see, I'll be sharing a lot of the thought processes that go on behind selecting those, how we go about building them, and the process that we sort of enjoy in the art department.
Well, for the literally millions of fans, I know many, many in my audience are excited about this particular program. Tell us a little bit about production design, and in particular, tell us a little bit about what your favorite sets have been that you've designed for Game of Thrones.
So the production designer in any art department is the head of the art department and therefore responsible, in my case, to HBO, to David Benioff and Dan Weiss, our two showrunners, and to our producers. But then from there, I'm responsible for being the visual guide of the show and also the cheerleader and champion of the art department, making sure that we're always moving things forward and, you know, bringing out the best in this massive team of people that we have. And that means that we're responsible for creating the concepts for these big worlds that we're building. And then we actually have to deliver them on schedule and on budget. So that means that if we're doing a studio build, which will probably be in our studios in Belfast, looking at those big builds, and then also going out on location, historically in Iceland, Croatia and Spain, and then working out exactly how the art department needs to augment these particular locations so that they accommodate a scene. I've been really lucky since I joined because we've had a lot of new worlds to establish. And for me, what's been really great is then also being able to watch the team sort of flourish in those challenges as well. So first of all, in season four, the very, very first set that we shot was called the Bank of Braavos, which had a very different aesthetic to what Game of Thrones had had in the past. And that, for me, always will hold a special place in my heart because that was the first time that the new team were able to sort of impact the look of the show. And so for that particular set, I was very interested in something that was very different to what had been seen in King's Landing, for instance. King's Landing has that very sort of Mediterranean feel and Mediterranean medieval sort of architecture. But in the Bank of Braavos, Dan and David were very interested in the architecture of the Third Reich. And so Albert Speer's architecture is all about the architecture of intimidation and power and wealth. And so that was something that we were able to bring in, you know, with big sort of stark walls and finishes, but very rich finishes. And it was a sign of power and wealth in a very different way to the way the show had portrayed that before. When we came to do Marine, that was also very exciting for us, and the big Marine audience chamber was a lovely big build that we did early on. And then more recently, the House of Black and White, I really enjoyed Braavos very much. And there's some lovely new builds in season seven that I think you'll all enjoy as well. Season seven was very, very busy for the arts department. I think it was our biggest season yet. And it's great because we actually got to explore a whole different sort of architectural language. And it's quite original, I think, the work that we've done there. So, yeah, it's been a wonderfully exciting process on the show, and certainly from a production point of view, production design point of view, you just don't get better than what Game of Thrones has been able to throw at us.
And I read that you actually were at one point an architecture student and influenced by many things, maybe the Third Reich, but maybe Frank Lloyd Wright and others.
Yes, that's right. So I started out my career in design as an architecture student with the intention of becoming an architect. And it was 3 years into that process that I realised that architecture in film, cinematic architecture, was also a very valid career all in itself. So that's when I moved across to study stage design in Australia. We have an amazing film, it's not even a film school, it's our big theatre school. It's called the National Institute of Dramatic Art. And so I went and studied stage design there. And then I was very fortunate because the first big film that came to Australia after I'd graduated was The Matrix. And so because I'd done architecture, because I'd studied architecture, I knew how to draw in order to get things built. And that's precisely the skills that they needed at the time, because Australia didn't have a large film base to draw on at that point. So I joined the film industry off that wave, and I was completely hooked right from the start. But I think what I've learned is that the most successful sets very often have real-world influences, and what's very important, particularly on Game of Thrones, I think, because it would be very easy for it to veer off into sort of just a fantasy world. I think one of the things that's very successful about the show is that it feels real. And in order for us to do that, we always start with research. And that's right. I mean, when we started with the Third Reich, talking about the Bank of Braavos, there were very sort of real-world influences of that. And when we came to Marine, Marine was a city that was built by slaves, and it was a pyramid city. And the wealthiest individuals in Marine would live in these pyramids. So we looked a lot at Mayan architecture and also Frank Lloyd Wright and his Mayan revival period, because what Frank Lloyd Wright did at this time was he actually made these domestic spaces using these pyramidal type of references. So That was very interesting for us to explore and to take a look at the architectural details and the textures that would help us sell this story of Marine.
What goes on in your mind's eye sometimes is very difficult to really get built, as you say, and we all live in this world of technology, and I'm sure for you it's maybe a blessing and a curse. What role does technology and this all of the digital graphics and the augmentation play in building sets and the ideas that you create? Does it change the way you think about telling this story for these actors and putting them in this environment?
I think when it comes to this show, the technology helps us enormously. We have a general rule, which is that everything behind the actors' heads, by the vast, vast majority, is always built. And this is basically comes down to a cost thing. The minute that you start digitally replacing what is behind the actors' heads, because the actors are moving around so much, that becomes very, very expensive. So for us, any digital augmentation will take place, you know, well above ceiling height, and also in the big wides that we're clearly not able to build. The thing about Game of Thrones is we're introducing whole new worlds, and so we really need that digital technology in order to show the wider space that, you know, we would never be able to build because of money and because of time. And then we can go inside and next to these sets that we build for real. And that way, hopefully, the audience gets the best of both worlds. They feel that they're immersed in a space as well as understanding exactly where they are. And, of course, we've got dragons and direwolves and giants and things. So there's
right.
The visual effects budget primarily has to sell these dragons as realistically as they can as well. So as much work that we can do in the art department to save money for dragons, I think, is also very important. And it becomes a game of kings and pawns for us. You know, is it better for the art department to completely take over that set, or, you know, in time and budget, can visual effects, look after particular elements? And so there's a lot of communication. We go back and forth a lot, working out how best to achieve a result for a particular set.
And so, for example, maybe the wall might be digitally built, but maybe the top of the wall, that area that is occupied by the actors, you might go in and design, your team might go in and design and build all that.
Yes, exactly. So within Castle Black, where the set itself is set inside an abandoned quarry in Belfast. So when we're inside the interior of Castle Black, inside that courtyard, we're using one of the big quarry walls as the ice wall there. It's all painted white, and it's very successful, actually. When I first saw it, that's one of the sets that I inherited when I joined. It's a very, very clever use of that space, and it sells the ice wall beautifully. But, of course, when you're looking at, you know, for the shots that look up, and when you're looking up to, you know, where the lift finishes and to the top of that 700-foot ice wall, that's obviously been digitally enhanced. When you go outside to the gate, when you see the gate and there's that very iconic shot of them walking out into that ice tundra, that is something that, you know, we've got the big gate in Belfast. It goes up and down. But once that height has been established, once the gate is fully in its sort of up mode, the set finishes very quickly after that. So it's interesting. It's we build just enough to get us sort of clear, and then our visual effects team take over after that.
There's this real feeling, too, that you get. You go back to season four, for example, and in addition to the Bank of Braavos, you know, we're in Dorne, and Dorne is more hedonistic, you know, maybe more relaxed even, yet you really are bringing that sense to us as viewers. And so I'm curious, what kind of ideas did you have about, you know, at that point, kind of getting this relaxed feeling?
It seemed very much as though the sense of the Alcazar in Seville was somewhere that fitted it absolutely beautifully. And so once we went and scouted there, and the royal family gave us their blessing to be able to shoot there, which was an enormous honour. And, you know, the whole area is a World Heritage Site. So the fact that they're letting a shooting crew through is a tremendous, tremendous privilege. And so I think that helped establish the feelings of Dawn and the richness and the opulence of it, but at the same time a very airy, summery place, very well. And the great thing about it was that purely from my personal point of view, they closed down the Alcazar for us, you know, for 5 days while we were shooting. So to be able to walk through those gardens by ourselves was absolutely incredible. To be able to arrive at work in the morning and walk through with the place to yourself was absolutely something I'll never forget.
I'll bet you that even added to the to what you were bringing to it all.
Yes, and I think I was very lucky and worked with Alejandro González Iñárritu very early in my career with the production designer Bridget Brock. And when I worked with him, the thing that he really taught me was the value of locations and that an audience, but even the crew themselves, when they're working there, when what a location can give you that a built set can never give you is just the smell and the atmosphere of a place. There's something very special and very emotional when you walk into these very special spaces. And that's something that's much, much more difficult to replicate on stage. And I think when we were shooting in Spain and when we were shooting those Dornish locations, we really benefited by the quality of that location. And the camera just, you know, the camera picks all of that up. It's an interesting thing because I think sometimes we tend to sort of think, oh, well, you know, it doesn't really matter. But actually it does. There's just some sort of X factor when you're in an extraordinary location that the camera sees something that's just that little bit, it has that extra quality to it that, you know, you just wouldn't get any other way.
How much of the books are you using as reference points? For example, you know, I'm a fan of the both, actually. The TV show is wonderful. The George R. R. Martin books, Song of Ice and Fire series are wonderful too. And I love the detail of the characters and the descriptions. Some seem to match up identically. What is your kind of sense of matching that up and reference points in the books? Are you using those to really guide you? Is that a starting point and then you're kind of taking a little bit of license to stretch a bit of the production design to bring it more in line with your take on the story? How do you kind of arrive at that middle ground?
From my perspective, I'm only working from the vision of David and Dan, our two showrunners. So they have obviously met a lot with George R. R. Martin and they're, you know, taking his vision and then they pass that along. And so for the clarity of that, I actually keep myself very much to the information that they're giving me. I email them constantly throughout the pre-production process. So for every concept that we draw, every single set that we do has to have an accompanying piece of concept art, which David and Dan need to approve. So I'm always making sure and double and triple checking that we're meeting the vision that they have, which has obviously been interpreted from the original material. So that's one way that we try and make sure that the vision is really clear. And I just keep that line of communication with them. And, you know, and sometimes with our concepts, it's easier than others. And about, I don't know, 70%, 80%, I guess, you know, we would get pretty close first time, and then there's others that for some reason I'm just not clicking into the way David and Dan would see something, and that's a part of the process, I think. You know, we go back through and we do it again and again until we get exactly what they're wanting. So I work entirely with their vision, and they're very they're as generous as they are talented with their ideas about that, and they're very clear in what they're looking for. So in that respect, we've been very, very lucky because we've had really strong leadership in that way.
Your group, your team might supply artwork to the showrunners and then that artwork would get approved. Do you even get down into the detail, your team even drawing some of the family banners and the family crests? And, you know, Ramsey Bolton was just one evil dude. And and their family banner was evil looking.
Yes, that's right. So within the art department, we also have a graphics department, and that's been run by a guy called Jim Staines for the most part. And Jim has, in the words of David and Dan, he's had, as an individual, the biggest impact on the show of anybody, because every piece of merchandise has Jim's artwork on it in some fashion, because he's designed all of those flags and family crests and all of those sort of pieces that have now become, you know, just part of the general sort of layering of those worlds. And there's Jim is written all over it. So from a graphic designer's point of view, it's something that's very specific to that sort of time period and something that he's been immersed in right from the very, very beginning. So, you know, I owe Jim an enormous debt to be able to, you know, share all of his talents and knowledge of that with me. It's been extraordinary.
From a production design standpoint, as the character Cersei Lannister burns down Westeros and those wildfire scenes, those are some of the most dramatic and new-looking. Where did those ideas start?
One of those sort of images that we had for all of that had come from, you know, years before when they'd established the wildfire earlier on, and when Miguel Sapochnik came to approach it, and we wanted to have those images of Cersei being able to look sort of over all of King's Landing and straight at the Sept as the Sept was blown up. So, yes, there was a lot of concept art of exactly the view that she would have when she was standing on her balcony there looking at, you know, the Sept be destroyed and all of the people who were standing inside it. So, as with everything else, it begins with concept art and trying to work out exactly where in the Red Keep Cersei would be in order to witness all of that. And when we were looking at those sort of tunnels underneath the Sept as well, that was something that was planned out very carefully as well, just how we would sell this idea that, you know, there was this sort of network of wildfire that had been stored under there. And, yes, that would be the thing that would ignite, basically, you know, destroying that whole building and particularly all of her enemies inside. It was an amazing image, I think.
Mm-hmm. We are with Deborah Riley. Deborah is going to be with the Smithsonian Associates June 13th, 2017, talking about creating the visual world of Game of Thrones. Deborah, I know you're very busy, so I just have one last question. Give us a little hint as to what you're most excited about for Season 7.
Well, for me, the thing that's most exciting about Season 7 is something that, as I read the scripts, you really understand that, you know, we're accelerating towards the end. Mm. And so when you bring all of these characters together that you've been watching for so long, it's really exciting. You see people crossing each other's paths that that we haven't witnessed before, and it's really, really thrilling. And in that way, from a production design standpoint, we're also establishing, you know, new places that they're doing that. So, you know, we have big battle scenes. We have, you know, more intimate interior settings. It's all lining up for the end game, and that's really exciting. And certainly now that I've started work on, you know, the very beginning of Season 8, I understand now where all the chess pieces have been placed and why they've been put there. So I think it's just such an extraordinary arc for a story, a very complex story that's been so well told. And I'm just really looking forward to seeing the audience reaction come the end of Season 7.
Well, Deborah Riley, we're looking forward to seeing you, hearing from you at Smithsonian Associates. Thanks so much for joining us today. Really, your work, the work of your team, this show is just groundbreaking in so many ways, and it's wonderful. Just draws you in immediately, and I know your presentation will do the same. Thanks for joining us today. Good luck with Season 7 and 8, and hopefully you'll be back, and we'll talk to you a little bit more as Season 8 unfolds.
Fantastic. I look forward to it.
Great. Thanks, Deborah, so much.
Thank you, Paul.
I hope you've enjoyed today's show. My thanks, of course, to Smithsonian Associates. Check out the website, The Not Old Better Show, for more information about Deborah Riley and the Game of Thrones, Smithsonian Associates, June 13th, 2017 at the Ripley Center. And, of course, my thanks to the musicians, the Chapel Hill Duo, for generously supplying the theme music today. Thanks, everybody.